Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
An employee has a job description.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a rough idea of what's expected of them day to day, but then there will be this clause that says, but you will do anything basically within the reasonable needs of the business. So whatever's asked of you, essentially. What are the worst things that we've come across that people have been asked to do, and actually, where is the line?
One of my friends had said that she used to have to gauge if it was for the toilet or for the recycling. Is it pee or is it pint?
The number of staff I have seen walk out and go, that is not my job. Like, I am not prepared to deal with that. And I think in hospitality, particularly where people are on minimum wage, jobs are easy to come by, they will walk.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Hero software and employment law consultancy services.
Alyssa's here, but we've also got... Introduce yourself, please, Michelle.
So my name's Michelle Healy. I have been working for Heroes for around 8 weeks now. So
that long already?
Yeah, 8 weeks.
I was going to say a month. Has it been 8 weeks?
It's been 8 weeks, yeah.
Wow.
Well, we are thrilled to have Michelle.
We actually are, yeah. I'm not just saying that for the podcast, really.
Yeah,
genuinely.
I must admit, it's a great company. I really am enjoying my time here, which is going to be forever, I hope. So for you guys out there, I am at Heroes. I have a number, have an email address. So please do come and get me if you need any help with anything.
So Michelle is our senior employment law advisor.
I am.
Is exceptionally experienced when it comes to advising either fellow HR, business leaders, line managers on the do's and don'ts when it comes to working with staff or helping them to problem solve or advising on legal risk. And we've thrown you in the deep end, really. We had this, you know, for all the stuff I talk about where we're like, probation should do this and this is how it should be wonderfully planned out. I think your first day was kind of like that. And then it was like, here's a load of work. Please, can you do it? Because I'm like, I just had so much going on that was unexpected that week. And you just hit the ground running.
Absolutely. And that's what I do. I absolutely love helping people through things that they're struggling with. I enjoy working with unions as well. So, you know, if you're having some problems there, I can always support you.
It's a rarity.
Yeah. I've worked in lots of different sectors. So started off predominantly in retail. So done quite a lot across the retail industry before being in HR. So I was a store manager. I've done every department pretty much. So I do get it. It's hard work out there. So if there's any retailers out there I can support. Yeah. I've worked in advice, in business services, and I've been a people consultant. So gone out to places where they've had no HR at all, but similar to this, but more in person than the advice side of things. So yeah, lots of experience and keen to help.
Yeah. And you fitted really well into the team. So what I love is how you and Dawn particularly are like, Michelle's the best hire you could ever have made.
I think
just because you gel so well within the team.
I'm not going to say the superlative, but I said she's something great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Jim said the same as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's something great. Yeah.
I feel like you've always been here, which is nice. But it also means if you ever leave me, I'm going to spiral into a black hole.
Don't leave me. You're going to help us. Well, I say help. We're going to discuss the bits.
It's a messy topic.
Oh.
Messy topic. So quick trigger warning for this episode, we are going to be talking about various elements that might put you off your food. So we know that some listeners do like to listen during their lunch break or their tea break. So if you're about to eat, have just eaten or are indeed eating, this might be an episode to maybe wait until you're out walking the dog or driving the kids home, because I'm sure they'll find it hilarious. Because we are going to be talking in the round about vomit, human excrement and violence in the workplace. So with that in mind... Now's your opportunity to switch over to another episode, not to turn us off entirely. But yeah, bookmark this one for another time if you are eating and you've got a sensitive stomach.
We're talking about unreasonable duty in workplaces. I don't know if I didn't come up with this, but I thought like in clauses, contracts, can't get my words out. In contracts I've had before, it's been like these are your duties and whatever the business may deem suitable along them lines.
So basically it's where... An employee has a job description.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a rough idea of what's expected of them day to day, but then there will be this clause that says, but you will do anything basically within the reasonable needs of the business. So whatever's asked of you, essentially. We had a query that came in, which prompted this as an idea.
Yes.
Which was very quickly followed up by an experience I had on public transport. So maybe we open with the public, what happened on public transport.
Go on,
I think
the
it's
recent,
great. Yeah. So it's on the train back from London. And for those familiar with the economy class on Avanti, and for all the various disgusting elements that you come across day to day, this day last week coming back from London really did sort of top it off, where there was an individual sat at a four-seater table by himself, steadily nailing bottles of, he had little bottles of vodka, he had whiskey, he had cans of beer, and he was really, really going for it. This guy clearly wanted to sort of find the bottom of everything that he was drinking. And then he fell asleep, and whilst he was asleep, he proceeded to start vomiting.
Oh, wow.
And it was going all over the table. You could hear it coming in various waves. He woke himself up, to which I then heard him go, oh no, and then proceeded to continue to vomit before he then passed out face down on the table. And the train conductor had obviously been informed, or he'd seen it on the cameras, walks down the train, and I heard him on his radio, obviously speaking to someone more senior, going, really? Yes, yeah, I have to do this. Right. Yes, okay. And then he goes off, gets his gloves and an apron and a face mask, and then proceeds to clean it up. Because it can't just sit there for the whole train ride. And it was a hot day coming back from London.
I'm getting like, I can smell it.
It was just awful. And it was just so topical because we've been talking about this only the day before when we were sort of scoping out these episodes. And what you'll typically hear in this is, that is not in my job description.
That is not my job.
I am not paid enough to do this.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
And so, yeah, we've got this idea of what are the worst things that we've come across that people have been asked to do, and actually, where is the line?
We've got some examples here of like the worst duties on certain jobs, and I'm hoping you two can sort of clear up whether it's reasonable or not, or we can obviously throw some opinions in there, can't we, what we think and what we'd do, because personally, I'm not cleaning up poo.
Well, in the RNLI world, I've actually got some personal anecdotes of stuff that I've had to do, which we'll come on to later. But what about you, Michelle? Is this?
Oh, absolutely. So I think my main one would have been in retail. Lots and lots of different things found around stores, on car parks, etc., from dirty nappies to needles to all sorts of things. So it's who is it that cleans that up? So the rule of thumb really is that anybody who is available. So written into their contracts would be any additional duties, and that would be seen as one of the additional duties. So it was more around, I think, for me, the tools for the job than who would do it. So you'd find most people, maybe the porters or the warehouse guys or whatever, would be happy to go and do it, but they need protection. It's about your bodily fluid kits. So we always had them in. So if anyone doesn't know, it's yellow bags. It's what they use at the hospitals. The paramedics use, they use in the doctors when you get your blood taken, whatever. So the yellow bags are what you need to have if you may come across bodily fluids. A litter picker, a face mask, gloves, whatever else. But yeah, I've had everything. And one quite grueling example of that would have been that once I worked in a store where somebody came in to steal some alcohol. So they placed it under the clothing section and then went back after stealing a paring knife and tried to take the labels off. And they actually missed the tag and went straight through the wrist. So there was lots of blood, lots of things. And the cleaner came out with the little nunu and it was like, no, we don't do that. We can't use that. We'll have to throw it away. So it's who's going to do that. And we did have to get professionals in for that. We did have to close off the area. However, you know, it happens.
That's a really interesting point. One, I want to come back to the nunu. What's a nunu?
So just, you know, well, if anybody remembers Teletubbies, the nunu would be the vacuum cleaner
and
the water picker upper that they used to use in Tubbyland.
Yeah, learn something new every day.
So we used to call the nunu because
did
it was
did you know what a nunu was?
I knew full well.
Did you? So you don't know there's 52 weeks in a year, but you know what a nunu is?
I know
is.
What a nunu is, yeah.
However, it had a really long name, which nobody knew. So we used to say, can somebody get the nunu?
But you're right on the professional teams. I remember I was at school with, so I think it was So I went to an all-girls school, neighbouring school, an all-boys school. One of the boys there was a son of one of my parents' friends, and they had like a disaster recovery business, and their job is to go into the cleaning jobs that no one else would go and do. So there was one where someone who was isolated, fairly elderly, had passed away in a flat, and no one had noticed they'd been gone for a while. And obviously that situation, that is professional cleaning where you're looking at decontamination. There's a real risk of kind of what's in the air. So there are specialist teams who will do this sort of thing. Where do we bring those in? You know, what is the situation? So we'll go through some of these examples and think, is that one where it's reasonable to bring in a specialist team, or actually is it one where we need to kind of be putting on our grown-up pants and getting on with it?
If it was a few drops of blood or a few drops of poop, then we would be expecting somebody to be able to clean that up, including myself as a manager. You know, there's no reason I can't put my gloves on, get my mask and get my bodily fluid kit and do it myself.
Yeah. Crack on.
And there's some situations, I'd say, where you're constrained by circumstance. So one of my RNLI examples is we rescued a woman who broke her, I think it was her wrist, or maybe it was both wrists. And the ambulance was going to be like 6 hours. And when we got her back to the lifeboat station, she needed the bathroom. But she had 2 broken wrists.
Yeah, you can't do much of that, can you?
And so immediately every head swivels to me being the only female in the room going, oh, off you go. And I'm like, one, I'm not trained to do this. I'm not a trained nurse.
No.
But equally, there's a dignity point. Do you just allow somebody who's already in pain to essentially soil themselves? I wouldn't want to be. I'd prefer that someone came to help me, whether they were trained or not. So off we went. I think it's the first time I've spoken of this since that day.
You've never mentioned it before, right? Wow.
Never to be mentioned again.
And it's and I do remember being in that bathroom thinking, this is not why I joined the RNLI. I'm not on a boat. I'm not saving a life. I'm helping a very, very poorly woman to go to the loo.
Got a question for that.
Oh no, we're not going there. I think I know what you're going to ask me.
It's number based.
Number one, thankfully.
Jolly good.
Yeah. That would have been a specialist team job. I think I'd have been ringing around community nurses going, just please someone come and help with this situation, but that for me was about preserving that person's dignity, despite the fact that I'm talking about it on a podcast.
Empathy in that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Empathy.
Yeah. So I think, you know, sometimes situations can actually constrain what your response is.
That's wild, mate.
Yeah.
First example, similar to that, cleaners in care homes and cleaning up excrement.
So this situation was a response to a query from a line manager where in a care home environment, human excrement had been thrown at the walls. Mm-hmm. And the cleaners who'd been asked to clean it up said, that is not my job, and refused to do it. And the line manager said to me, well, what do I do? Can I make them do it? It's not in their job description. Their job description does not say clean up human excrement. Is that something that I can ask somebody to do?
But you know, if that's the angle people are coming at, then you're going to want every single little nitty gritty detailed job you do in your contract, which is wildly unrealistic and never going to happen.
And jobs evolve, don't they? You know, so what you start with as a job description does morph into something else entirely. So what would your view on this one be, Michelle?
I think it's twofold, really. So you've got your cleaners who clean, and you've got your carers who clean up excrement on a body. Mm-hmm. So for me, it'd be a joint task. Mm-hmm. Would you get rid of the excrement and can you clean what's left? Mm-hmm. Would be a reasonable
team effort.
Yeah, a reasonable thing for me. And maybe the manager's stepping in to support as well. Mm-hmm. It's got to be done. Mm-hmm. We can't leave this person in this room in this state.
Yeah, I really like that as an approach, particularly by splitting it, because particularly if carers are more used to this kind of thing, you know, to do the stuff that's maybe perhaps more of the grotty end of it. Where you've got this absolute refusal, so my view on this is, you know, in an environment where this is foreseeable that this is going to happen.
It does happen, yeah.
That ultimately, if we have someone who even then in that situation where we're saying, look, we'll team you up with someone else and we'll provide you with this support, and they're still going, absolutely not, that's not my job, it's not in my job description, it would be, well, I'm issuing you with a reasonable management instruction.
Yeah.
If you fail to follow that reasonable management instruction, then the likelihood is that we're going to be looking at disciplinary proceedings. Because then that's our kind of the final, you know, if the carrot doesn't work, the final stick that we have is, I'm issuing you with a reasonable management instruction. And I will often tell line managers to phrase it in that way so that they are absolutely clear about what it is and sort of where we're at with that situation.
Okay. That's the first time I've heard that term.
Yeah.
Is that official?
Yeah.
That's the thing. People say that.
Yeah. I've used it lots.
Yeah.
Do as you're told. Second one, teenage homes and violent teens. I've kind of got a bit on this. I used to work in SC on education.
So do you want to tell us about one of those situations maybe?
I could tell you about multiple. Mm. I was sort of, you have to restrain them sometimes. Mm-hmm. You have to, because prevent danger to themselves, prevent danger to you.
So do you want to tell us a bit about the environment? What are these kids? What's the environment that you're in?
I use difficulties.
Are these residential homes or daycare?
Some of them lived there.
Yeah.
But a lot of them went to school there. Mm-hmm. And it was like autism, ADHD, some of them had a combination, some were nonverbal, or like some of them quite traumatic past and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there was a reason why they were behaving like that. Do you know what I mean? It's not their fault. But it'd get violent and you'd have to restrain them. We were all taught, team teaching, what have you. One specific example I can remember was one of the lads, he got completely out of control and it sounds bad, but we locked him in a tennis court, but it's a big area. And he couldn't really hurt himself anyway. He couldn't hurt anyone else. But me personally, I didn't really mind doing it. Because they're not particularly strong, or neither am I, but I'm a man, they're boys. Mm-hmm. So I didn't mind doing it. I found it quite reasonable. Mm-hmm. But, and this isn't being sexist, some of the women didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Because, I don't know, they had kids of their own and it was quite traumatic for him. I didn't mind, I'm a young lad, whatever. I've got no emotional involvement in the game at all. I will take on the mantle, fine. Mm-hmm. So I saw it as more than reasonable. It was part of the job.
Mm. I mean, back in my claimant days, and particularly for the area of the country that I used to work in where there was a concentration of these schools, I dealt with a lot of people who'd been dismissed for using too much force.
Is a thing.
And when you break down the situations where you have got, in some cases, they were like 16-year-olds, so they are almost the size of adults.
Yes.
And there are fists flailings. I remember one guy was bitten on the neck. Mm-hmm. You know, real, quite extreme violent behaviour where people are picking up objects to hit the carers with. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, yes, okay, to an outsider, it may look like too much force was used, but I was trying to make that person safe and the people in the working environment and the other children safe. And
could be a threat to life.
Yeah.
Never know, do you?
And they were really, really difficult cases because you can see where the employer's coming from, because they say, here's the guidance, here's the training that you've had, we expect you to stick to it. But then you have a human being in a situation at work where they do feel that their life and their safety is potentially under threat, and they're operating in that fight or flight mode, and trying to control yourself in that situation is a task.
Yes,
I'm not saying emotional. The people who overstep the mark that it's justified, but they're very, very difficult cases, particularly where someone's lost their job over it, because often that means they're never going to work in the sector again if they've just been dismissed for what is classed as violent or aggressive behaviour. Mm-hmm. So it's a really, really hard one. And it's a really, really challenging environment, I think, for people to work in. And I'd say, yeah, when it comes to, you know, choosing who is involved in those situations where restraint or perhaps counter behavior is required. So I think from memory, they'd talk about trying to divert someone first.
Yeah, you'd like, yeah, sort of,
or trying to distract, or you know, yeah. So there's various other things that you do first.
Oh, it's last port of call, mate.
Yeah,
it's last port of call. Mm. No one wants to be gripping up sweaty teenage boys.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's not nice at all.
Yeah, but it's they're really, really difficult cases from a legal perspective, because it's all very well in an office environment afterwards, looking at what someone has done and going, well, that was too much. Whereas in the situation where this is actually happening to someone, the judgment used is very different, whether that's right or wrong. It's very easy to be clinical about it afterwards and break down someone's behaviour when you're not in the situation where you're having to live through it yourself.
Oh, I'd go and cry a few times after it. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't nice. I enjoy it.
Yeah, and I think in that situation as well, it can depend on what's happening while they're in there. I wouldn't advise anybody to lock anybody in anything. However, a tennis court, quite open, you can still see what they're doing. They can see you. You can talk to them. But if you're going to, I suppose, be confrontational with them, I've told you to calm down, I've told you need to, well, that behaviour wouldn't be acceptable.
No.
So it all depends on really, you know, how you communicate to them while they're in there. If you calm down, we can let you out. We don't want you in there, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, not just in the care environment, it's the same across any sector, really. If you're doing a disciplinary, get to know who the person is that you're going to be actually dismissing potentially or giving a warning to. Plan it, you know, where you see where you're going to sit. Plan the exit route. Mm-hmm. So I've always thought to myself, well, if I need to leave this room, then I can get out through that door, so I'm going to sit there. But if I know that the manager that is actually doing the disciplinary has a problem with this person or they have a problem with them, well, they need to be able to get out and not me, because it's usually them that they'll go for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, plan.
It's very interesting you mentioned there, like how you speak to them. In that same sort of instance of the tennis court thing, there was a few of us like monitoring the kid, but one of the lads who was monitoring him actually got sacked because of what he was saying to the lad. And I was like addressing the situation and he was aggravating it with his words. And we all got I got pulled in for a meeting of like my thoughts on it. We obviously got pulled in for like giving evidence type thing. Do you know what I mean? I don't know the official term for it. I'm not as glad with the knowledge as you two are. But yeah, he got sacked for how he was wording things.
That makes me think of, again, it's another train story. Actually, I think it was the same journey as when the guy threw up on the train.
Bad journey.
But yeah, I'd gone to try and change something with my ticket and I was queuing up at Euston. And there was a guy who, the best language probably is just kicking off at the guy who was behind the counter. Mm-hmm. And he was getting more and more and more irate. So I think the situation was from, because, you know, British like to eavesdrop. He had had his phone and his wallet stolen. As a result, he'd missed his train because he was faffing around trying to sort out phone and wallet. And his ticket was a fixed ticket. He couldn't now get on another train, but he had no means of paying for another ticket. Mm-hmm. And basically, the answer that he kept giving was basically, computer says no. Like, you don't have a ticket, you don't have means to pay, you can't travel. And so he was getting more and more and more and more irate. And so initially there were some PCSOs, the blue policemen with him. Mm-hmm. And then train security arrived. So at one point he was surrounded by 9 people while he was kicking off. The guy behind the counter was staying very calm. And at one point the guy did racially abuse him. The guy stayed very calm, really, really professional.
Come on,
the
man.
Guy in the seat next to him stands up, points at the customer and starts laying into him. And I thought, you're going to get disciplined. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're just offending your colleague and you're trying to kind of step in and, you know, be like, right, you can't talk to him like that. But actually, you've just inflamed this situation and it was nothing to do with you. There was a line manager present who was stood back, just kind of watching the situation unfold, who was there for support. It had nothing to do with the guy next to him. It looked really unprofessional. And I thought, in this entire situation, the only person who's getting, because this guy is just going to get turfed out on the pavement, ultimately.
Yeah.
The only person who's getting in trouble here is, I was like, it's you, mate. That is, and it was in view of a full pack. It was packed in there.
Oh, no.
So in front of loads of people, I just thought, no. And it was, and again, the language he was using, he swore at the guy. It wasn't good.
Oh, I'm curling my toes a bit.
Secondhand professional embarrassment. But,
wow.
Yeah, so I mean, ultimately, in the situations with the teenagers and violent teens, it's got to be someone's job to help care for these people. Yes, people need to be specially trained to do so. I would say in these situations, if they're asking someone who either hasn't had that training or perhaps not enough experience of it, that would be an unreasonable ask. That wouldn't be classed as a reasonable management instruction to deal with someone who's violent, where you don't have that training or at least a level of experience in a slightly safer environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be that you deal with the smaller kids first or something like that, or shadow someone, or maybe go through some sort of role play or additional training before then you're in the sort of situation which you're describing.
Absolutely. Junior school staff potty training children.
Mm. So this is an anecdote that I've had from a family member who's a junior school teacher.
Okay.
Of kids turning up to school having not been potty trained at home. And these aren't nursery kids, they are in junior school.
That's like 7.
Yeah, in some cases.
Right.
And that the teachers essentially are told by the parents, it is your job to finish the job, basically.
I think it just depends on the circumstance as well, because, you know, some children will have reasons for why they're still in, you know, nappies or pull-on pants or whatever. So you'll find that maybe somebody who has an ADHD or some sort of thing like that will struggle to be dry by day. They probably dry all night, or it'll be the opposite. They'll be dry all day and wet every night. And that can go on up until 7 or 8 years old. So I think you need to find out the facts before you start and saying whether or not it's right for school to be doing that. But I think generally, absolutely not. It's a parent's job.
It is parents' job.
So what this person told me is it's becoming much, much more endemic. it's not just one demographic.
Oh.
It's very much the pattern that they are seeing, and not just kids with behavioural issues. It's a mainstream school. It's, becoming more and more. So they're having to show the kids how to brush their teeth. They're having to show the kids how to hold a knife and fork.
I imagine having a kid and not expecting to like do the miles.
Yeah. Yeah. That they're finishing off that kind of, where a child goes from needing absolute care to having an element of independence, where they can go to the bathroom unaided, where they can brush their teeth, they can hold their cutlery and eat their dinner, is that they aren't getting that independence from home, that they are expecting the teachers to do it.
And like you say, Michelle, there are exemptions mm-hmm. to rule.
Yeah.
Like your autistic kids, ADHD mm-hmm. kids, they mm-hmm. can't understand the behaviour. Mm-hmm. But yeah, predominantly.
Yeah. So they're being told, rather than by the head or the board of the school or the governors or whatever, it's the parents who are saying, it is your job to do this.
Oh, what's staff reacting?
Well, they're not going to, it's a dignity thing. Again, they're not going to allow a child to soil themselves at school. They are trying to encourage the process along, but they are doing it with the view of saying, this is not my job. And you do see some who leave the profession. They say, this is not why I became a teacher.
The people that want to do these jobs as well, enjoy it. You assume they go into it because they want to form the minds of tomorrow sort of thing. And I think it'll, in the long term, it'll discourage people from doing that.
Yeah.
So we're all going to lose, aren't we?
And I think in primary schools, reception classes, they expect accidents, whatever. Those teachers are much more accustomed to kind of dealing with this as part of the environment. Same with nurseries. You know, that is part of the job. But then you do reach an age bracket where I would say it's unreasonable to expect that to be part of the job. But again, when we take that context and environment into play, they end up having to do it. So like with the RNLI example I gave, is context and environment can sometimes dictate, mm-hmm. you know, how you have to respond to that. So even if the school agreed and said, yes, that's not your job, from a dignity perspective and human rights perspective, are we going to allow a child not to have their food because they can't use a knife and fork? Are we going to let them go through the day unable to use the bathroom because we're not prepared to help them?
On a bit of a comedic note as well, you don't want them stinking up the gaff, do you?
No, you don't. No, you've got to think about the environment for everybody else.
No, not at all.
Fourth one, bar. This is a bit soft, a bit of a nicer one.
Yeah.
Bar staff cleaning up after hours.
Yeah. Who's worked in a bar? Me? No. I worked in a bar.
No.
Really?
I've
like
pots.
A rite of passage.
I've washed pots, so kind of, yeah.
Yeah. I mean... People are just minging when they drink.
Minging? You've never used that word.
Oh, they're just awful when they drink. Cleaning up a bar after hours is just not nice.
It's not it.
And generally, like, so lots of bars will get cleaners in, but the bar staff kind of have to do the initial.
Yeah, you
go get the glasses and pick stuff off the floor. And there's just everything from, you know, broken glass to needles to underwear to condoms and excrement in the bathroom. There's just every underwear. Measure of human kind of disgustingness.
Who's leaving knickers at bar?
Well, obviously the people who are also using the condoms, I suspect.
God.
But
yeah,
it's I mean, you must have come across drunk women before. Drunk women do crazy things.
Yeah.
They do crazy things.
Yeah. You're not wrong, to be fair. I don't know why I'm second guessing that.
Having said that, just for the avoidance of doubt, I have never left my underwear anywhere. Just saying, that's not my behaviour. That's me having to clean up other people's behaviour.
That's external experience, and rightfully so.
And you see, I live by the beach. Stuff you see down the beach in the morning as well. It's like, go home, guys. Like
knickers too.
Go find somewhere like warm and clean. Don't like.
It's romantic.
It's not for me.
It's not for me. Like sand gets in places and stuff. I imagine. Not for me. I don't think that one's that bad. Like, it's a bit, like you say, a bit minging.
It's probably worse than you realise.
Yeah.
I could just think, you know, I've never worked in a bar, but I've got friends who have. And some of the stories I've been told have been just minging.
And especially it's after a night of bad behaviour.
Yeah.
Where people have been awful over the bar, when people have been abusive. And you just think, you know what, this has been the worst shift ever.
Yeah.
I'm getting memories back now. And then, I've done in bars.
Yes. And then you have to go and clean up after the cretins who have been drinking in the bar all night.
One of my friends had said that she used to have to gauge if it was for the toilet or for the recycling. Is it pee or is it pint?
Oh, you don't know, do you? Your nose does.
Exactly. You wouldn't want to, would you? I think.
Yeah. Not
so
for me.
The number of staff I have seen walk out and go, that is not my job. Like, I am not prepared to deal with that. And I think in hospitality, particularly where people are on minimum wage, jobs are easy to come by, they will walk.
Yeah.
So actually that puts more of the power in the employee's hands rather than the line manager. If we go, well, I'm issuing you with a reasonable management instruction, and your 18-year-old barmaid goes, well, you can stuff your job, I'm going to go work in the bar next door. You know, the reasonable management instruction doesn't mean anything. So in these situations, then it's around, well, do actually we have those really robust professional cleaners that we just bring in at the end of a shift? Or, you know, are we kind of, as line managers in a bar, you know, rolling up our sleeves and helping the staff do it and setting the example to say, well, look, I'm prepared to do this. I wouldn't ask you to do a job that I wouldn't do myself.
That's what you should be doing. Fifth and final duty. You, I imagine, I don't know about you, Michelle, I don't know much about your graduate history, but I know you've had experience.
I mean, this one's not just limited to graduates. This is, you know, anyone who's kind of been in an entry-level role. So this was something that did happen to me as a junior, being sent to pick up dry cleaning for partners, being asked to move their car around car parks so that they don't get pinged for the expensive all-day parking in city centres, and going to pick up people's lunch for them.
Seems like a bit of a waste.
It's not why I spent tens of thousands on law school. I'd be happy to pick up someone's lunch, you know, occasionally when someone says, I'm working through. Would you, when you're out, just mind picking something up? But it is not my job to go and pick up someone's dry cleaning or move a car around. However, as an entry-level lawyer, you do it. You're playing the game.
Do what you got to do, man.
Well, I think I've got one a little bit worse than that.
Oh,
so when I first went into HR, and I was sort of an interim, really, and I had a HR manager, and she was quite high up in the company as well. So she used to send me out for midget gems, and I used to have to take the black ones out because she didn't sweets.
Okay.
First of Nunu, now this.
So she used to have me take the black ones out, the licorice ones, because she didn't like them. So I'd go and get them. I'd come in. If she was there, she would leave money on the side. I'd know what it was for. I'd go down to the post office where the sweet shop was, get the midget gems, come back, sit on my desk and put gloves on, take the black ones out and then take them to her. And she used to just go.
I'd have been licking the other ones and putting them back in.
Yeah. She never said thank you. She never said anything. She'd just go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Though at least she left you the money. I remember as a trainee solicitor being asked to go get someone's lunch, and I would do, and they'd never give me the money for it.
You'd pay for lunch.
And I was on like no money. Yeah. And I think I was talking through what my budget used to be like when I first started out. And I was like
one egg on
showering and washing my hair in the gym to save on electricity.
Yeah.
Because the gym was like, it was when Pure Gym was new. It was like £9 a month. So it was cheaper to wash my hair, go to the gym every day, use the heating there, essentially get nice and warm and then go home. And I used to have a single egg on a tortilla, so I'd make scrambled egg wraps, and that was my tea every night, because it was, I could do a week shop for like 10 quid. And then this partner would be like, can you nip to Carluccio's and go get me? And it'd be like 20 something quid. And if that happened once, more than, you know, two or three times, I'd be in my overdraft.
Jesus Christ.
I never just kind of went, oh, you know, here's 20 quid towards it.
Carluccio sounds bougie as well.
Oh, it's a nice place in Manchester.
It sounds bougie.
So that, and it's something I'm always really panicky about. If someone goes and gets
You've paid me for 12 bites before.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a couple of quid for your chocolates, because I'm like,
You paid me delivery as well.
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
You got 2 quid.
Because I think there's nothing worse. Even if you can afford it.
Yeah.
It's not for a junior to be paying for your lunch. So yeah, I'd say as an entry level thing, you definitely, if someone's doing you favours, you make sure they're not out of pocket for it.
I mean, if they're not your parents, you shouldn't be paying for your lunch. As a child, of course.
As a child. I'm like, hi. I was like, Mom, can you? No. I know exactly how that conversation's going.
Get gone.
Though, I'm impressed that your husband made you lunch.
Yes.
And gave you a lunchbox. My husband doesn't make me a lunchbox.
That is
Fritz.
Lovely.
You did do it for me today.
Yeah. And
he's on a late shift, so he got up early for me as well.
Is it a regular thing?
Yes.
Yes.
If he's on a late shift, he'll do it for me.
You've got a good one.
I dread to think what would be in my lunchbox if I asked Fritz to make me
sausage
lunch.
Roll, Ploughman's.
It would be, he'd have had a bite out of something of his and go, oh, she can have the rest of that being a box with a bag of crisps.
A brown roll with ham on, and then I have some fruit and some water.
Mine would definitely have been opened and half eaten. There's no way you can handle food without taking a bite out of it first. So if it's a bag of crisps,
do you know what? I have, because it's a small roll, so I've got one and a half.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether he had the half.
That's where the other half is.
There you go. There you go. There's a metaphor there as well, because that's where the other half is, because that is your other half.
Yes.
That was cool. Yeah. It was good having you on. That was a nice little layer, I think. I enjoyed speaking to both of you.
Good, because I'm here to stay.
You are, yeah. I'm going to finish your career with, as you told me, which would be Be lovely. Yeah. But yeah, anything you two want to add before we sign off?
I think what we've learned is, well, one, importance of contracts. We've got to make sure that we have that in there about that we've got the right to ask someone to do something within the reasonable needs of the business. If your contracts don't already say that, obviously our software can provide it. And now also, we have the ability to, for people to edit their own contracts within there. We've got the merging functions.
We do. It's a Word plugin type thing. So you make your contract in Word with loads of like merge tags and it pulls in data off the employee's profile.
Tech speak for you can bespoke your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really, really cool. But also we've got to think about, is it reasonable? Is it something that actually, given the context and the environment, it might be a one-off? If this is going to be something that's more regular, do we need to think as a business about how we deal with these sorts of situations so that we're not consistently pushing people's buttons in extreme situations? And are we training people and do we have the right equipment?
Yeah, and if you're not sure, then we can help.
Yeah.
We can make the decision for you.
And in particular, Michelle can help.
I can help,
Michelle
absolutely.
Can help now. Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for your time, both. Yeah, it was lovely. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.